And this third one is on depression. And again, this is the function of this is not so much to cure people's depression. That's obviously a much, much bigger work. This is at least just to shed a little philosophical and theological light on what we mean by depression. Joy in Judaism has something to say about everything. And so certainly has something to say about depression, which in Hebrew is atzvut. Yeah, Darlene.
Do you record these? So if I wanted to go back to watch it, I could. Okay,
It's
that was
on
the main
recording.
thing because I have to be on Zoom with my kids like at 8, but I wanted to know if you record it so I can go back to it and listen to it.
And it'll be on the Kesher website on the education page.
Okay, super. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. No
All
problem.
right, bye-bye.
Okay, I'm gonna post the text link in the document and I'll also share it on screen. If you like to look at it separate, there it is. And I'll also share it. Okay. So the Torah addresses it sort of addresses depression. It's interesting. The modern Hebrew word for depression is, in fact, not just modern, but the older Hebrew word for depression is atzvut, etzef. Now, there's different words for pain, but one of the earliest words in the Torah is etzev. Now, you might think from reading the Torah that etzev is physical pain. Why might you think that? Because in the beginning of the Torah, right after the sin of Adam and Chava, God curses the snake and he curses Adam and he curses Chava. And the curse that it's a little confusing because the curse that Chava gets is the etzev tel divanim, that in pain you will give birth to children. The curse that Adam gets is beitzvon tochal mina kol. With etzev you will eat, right? The sweat of your brow you shall eat bread. Thorns will come up instead of what you planted, and you will eat all your days beetzev. Now, so the perplexing thing about this word etzev at the beginning of the Torah is that the pain, in theory, that Chava will endure from giving birth to children, which is called etzev, is physical pain. The pain that Adam is going to experience by planting and having, weeds come up instead of what he planted, and by having to work hard to plant is also called etzev, its bone. But that doesn't seem to be physical pain. That seems to be either exertion or the pain of disappointment because you planted one thing and instead you got weeds. So Aviva Zornberg says a fascinating thing. She says, really, the Torah is not here referring to physical pain. Physical pain would be a different word, ka'ev or something like that. But she says both of these really are psychological pain. How so? So she says, when Adam is told you're going to have etzev from agriculture, right? The way that it's put is you're going to plant one thing, and instead thorns are going to come up, thistles will come up, weeds will come up. In other words, it's upsetting because you planted one thing and instead you got another. And Saviv Zarmberg says that's what God is telling Chavan. It's not the physical pain of giving birth. That's difficult. But she says it's the same thing that Adam gets, which is that you plant children, you give birth to children, and you have in your head an idealism about who they're going to be. You think they're going to be, you in your own mind, you're whatever you are, 25, and think you're going to be the perfect parent. And your children are going to be well behaved, and your children are going to be Talmidei Chachamim. All right, welcome, Eliezer. You have an image of who your children are going to be in your mind because you're so wonderful and you're such a good parent. But they don't turn out to be that. They turn out to be their own people. We're very different than whatever image you had in your mind. That's the nature of human life because they're independent human beings, unless you force them to be who you want them to be, and that doesn't turn out well either. And so she says that's the commonality between the etzev, and the word etzev doesn't mean physical pain. It means more like disappointment, depression, something more psychological. And so that makes a lot of sense. Now, on some level, what's the opposite of physical pain? I would not say it's joy, right? The opposite of physical pain would be, you know, neutrality. It would be no pain, right? There's no opposite of physical pain except no pain. The opposite of depression, I think, is joy. Now, what is joy? Now, sometimes our image of joy is that it's, you know, woohoo! It's frivolity, it's happiness, it's some kind of very active, you know, levity. It's a party. But I think we'll see in the sources that the opposite that joy in Judaism, the opposite of depression, is not levity. It's not frivolity. It's not a party. It is equanimity. It's something much more. It's something different, and we'll see it soon. So the Torah writes in Devarim, in Deuteronomy, about the curses that will come to the Jewish people if they don't keep the Torah. And the Torah says all these curses are going to come upon you because you didn't listen to the voice of God and do the mitzvot. And they will be a sign among the nations, you know, about your sinning. There's a few different ways to read this pasuk, but I think the most obvious way to read it is because you didn't serve God with joy and the goodness of heart from everything, from the abundance that God gave you. In other words, that the curses, that's how many Mepharshim read it, that the curses that come upon the Jewish people are not just because they didn't listen to God, but they did, let's say they did listen to God, they did do the mitzvot. If you didn't do the mitzvot with joy, with simcha, then you'll get the curses also. Then you haven't, and in some way you have not really done the mitzvot. So why is that? In other words, if simcha means, you know, a party, so that's ridiculous. You can't do every mitzvah with a party. I'm not sure you should. You know, certainly the mitzvah of mourning on Tisha B'Av, you don't do with a party. Certainly, you know, fasting on Yom Kippur probably, even though it's one of the happiest days, we for us it's not a party. So joy must mean something else. And why is joy so central then for the mitzvot? What is it? What is joy essentially? And especially if joy is the opposite of depression, what is that joy? And how is it integral to every mitzvah? The Rabbeinu Bachaya, a classic commentary on the Torah, has a very interesting explanation. It says, because you didn't serve God with joy, it says, it's talking about, as I just mentioned, you served God, but not with joy. He says, because you're not only obligated to do the mitzvahs, but with each mitzvah, you're obligated in another mitzvah, which is joy. That's a fascinating idea. He says, the joy that you have when you do a mitzvah is its own mitzvah. You shake a lulav, you fast on Yom Kippur. One mitzvah is to do that. The other mitzvah is to have joy. Levad, so obviously it doesn't mean a party. Levad haschar sheyesh lo mitzvah yesh haschar l'simcha. You get reward for two different things, for doing the mitzvah and for having joy. Connected, obviously, with the mitzvah. Yal kein ya'anish bekan misha oved avodas ha-mitzvah kishlo asa b'simcha. It's very strange. What do you mean? I kept all the laws. You're going to punish me, God? That sounds crazy. So he says, no, because you only did half the mitzvah. Doing all the mitzvahs is only half the mitzvahs. The other half is to do the mitzvah with joy. The joy of the mitzvah is a separate thing. He says, mitzvah, simcha, von shlema. It's part of the intent. And this is what the Midrash says. There's a professor that I came across an article of his on simcha, Professor Alexander Tal, I'm not sure who he is, at Bar Ilan. And he takes off of this Rabbeinu Bachaya, and he says a nice thing. He says, how do you understand this Rabbeinu Bachaya? He says, Nimtza'enu lemedim sheish b'kiyum ha-mitzvah shem archivim shem. You see that there are two different elements to the mitzvah. Ein lihistapek b'milei hatzivu b'vad. It's not just doing the mitzvah. Yesh gam chova l'smoch b'kach. You have to also have simcha in doing it. Nasa levarer madua yesh l'kayim the mitzvah. He says, but why is it? Why should that be so integral to the mitzvah? I mean, you did the mitzvah. Isn't that enough? Chashale munach simcha ein hagdara chad mashmuti. L'chorachova l'smach b'zman kima mitzvah. M'nei shamitzvah tifayel tov yoter al ishiut ha'adam im hi tekuya mitoch simcha. The mitzvah is only going to work well if it's done through simcha, through joy. In other words, you think you did the mitzvah, but if you didn't do the mitzvah with joy, you actually have not. It's a little different than Rabbeinu Bachya said, in which it sounds like it's two different mitzvahs. Here he's saying it actually takes its toll on the mitzvah itself if you didn't do it with simcha. Mitoch hizdahut pinimiot, pinimit vaskama mitzara adam. The mitzvah has to be, because what's the purpose of a mitzvah? If a mitzvah is only to act like a robot and to do the mitzvah, so then it doesn't matter what your inner intent is. It doesn't matter if you have joy. You did the mitzvah. You did the mitzvah. That's it. In other words, like in America, you have to keep the laws so that people don't attack each other. It doesn't matter what your kavan is. It doesn't matter what your intent is. But in the theological world, it's a different story. The function of the mitzvah is not for you to be a robot and do the mitzvah. The function of the mitzvah is that it has to have a certain kind of impact upon you. And that can't be done without simcha. He compares the two, the laws of the civil laws of the country with the laws of the Torah. The purpose of the mitzvahs of the land, the commandments of the land, the laws, is to keep peace. So therefore, it doesn't matter what your inner intent is. But he says that's not true about the mitzvah of the Torah. But mitzvah se'ela, v'vadi mitzvah shvenon l'makom, certainly he says the spiritual mitzvah, the mitzvah that are ritual to you and God. Yish chashivut gam l'kavana ba'asiyat mitzvah. Your kavana matters. Your intent matters. V'mishtama mimeimar chazal shem. We see this in Chazal a lot, as per the idea in Chazal that God desires the heart. Rav Amar lo nitna mitzvah el tzarf ben adabriyot. In fact, there's a statement in the Gemara that Rav says the purpose of mitzvot is to perfect human beings. V'chima ichpat l'akadosh baruch hu. The Gemara says, what does God care if you slaughter an animal from the back of the neck or the front of the neck? If you slaughter from the back of the neck, it's unkosher. Slaughter from the front of the neck, it's kosher. Who cares, the Gemara says? What difference does it make to God? What end of the neck you slaughter the animal from? So the Gemara says, because the purpose isn't to slaughter the animal. The purpose isn't slaughter. Purpose is something much deeper. It's to impact the human being. It's to perfect the human being. We see this often in the Rambam, a sense that God is the great moralist. We don't always understand the reason for every mitzvah. We have to do it anyway. But the Rambam is very clear that every mitzvah has a purpose. And its purpose is the perfection of the human being, either in thought or in action or in ethics. Professor has a paragraph here that's very interesting. It sort of draws, I think, on Aristotle's notion of a virtue ethic. The question of what ethics is comes up all through the history of philosophy. And the Aristotelian idea was that what makes something good is the way that it cultivates virtue in the human being. Simcha notenet gemar v'shleimut el hadavar hanifal. Joy. How does joy work with a mitzvah? Joy helps the mitzvah to create wholeness in the human being through doing it. Because the point of the mitzvah is to create a certain wholeness, a certain, to change us in a certain way. And that only works well when it's done with simcha. Ki hanediv, kishiyase po'al hanedivut, when the giver, when the doer, who's sameach, when you do something and you give out of joy, but Paul Huikramala, it cultivates you, it refines you. And if you do it with pain or with depression or out of anger, it doesn't have the same impact. It doesn't create a sense of dignity, a sense of elevation. It might do the opposite, in fact. So how one does a mitzvah on some level is as important as doing the mitzvah. That's the idea that seems to be coming across in Rabbeinu Bachya, and that the key to how to do it is besimcha. Now, what does that mean, simcha? How do we find joy? What is joy, right? Assuming, again, that joy is not just being happy, woohoo, joy is some kind of equanimity, which is actually just the opposite of depression. So the Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Shmuel. Minayin liker shira, I'm actually going to do the Rambam first, then I'll go back to the Gemaras. Because the Rambam really speaks to this question of what simcha is. It says, haderach hayishara himid debeinunis. The Rambam famously says that the straight path for the human being is the path, the central path, the golden mean. in every midah, right? You shouldn't be too stingy. You shouldn't be too giving. You should be right in the middle. It should be right in the middle. And therefore, the rabbis commanded us that we should always take the middle path when it comes to character development. A person should not be angry, too angry. A person should not be too passive. They should be right in the middle. And only get angry for that which deserves getting angry. Anger is an interesting question, because later on, the Rambam seems to say you should never be angry. Person shouldn't have too much desire, but shouldn't have no desire. Should have desire for that which is needed. Believe Fazimoni shouldn't, throw away all his money. On the other hand, he shouldn't be too miserly. And somebody in the central path, Kobachacham. And then he says, Kol Neviim, sorry. And then he talks about joy. He says, V'lo yehe maholel v'sochek. Person shouldn't be frivolous, lighthearted, joking all the time. V'lo etzev onein. And a person shouldn't be downtrodden and depressed. What's the middle path, says the Rambam, between frivolity and depression? Simcha, joy. Very interesting. The Rambam says joy is the middle path. Right? We often think of at my birthday party, I'll be joyous. I'm having a party. If something terrible happens, I'm going to be depressed. But the middle ground is just normal. No, the middle ground is called simcha. It's called joy. And what is that, says the Rambam? Says that is a kind of being. It's a kind of being in the world. Benachat is a sense of satisfaction. Besever panim yafot. A person smiles, right? Smiling is not crazy. Smiling is normal, says the Rambam. V'chein shar deyotav, and so too with other midot, says the Rambam. So that's very interesting, that for the Rambam, simcha is the middle path. Simcha is normality. Simcha is, there. It's not frivolous joy, but it's joy. And it's a sense of nachat, of being satisfied, of having what you need, being appreciative, and sever panim yafos, and smiling. Says in the Torah, Kol HaNevim, this is also from the Mishnah Torah, Kol HaNevim Misnabim Mechalei Chiyirtzu, that prophets could not just have prophecy. Ele Mechavnim Datam B'Yoshvim Smechim V'Tovei Lev Misbodidim. They had to sit alone, they had to meditate, but it had to be out of a state of simcha, out of joy. Shein HaNevu Ashora, the divine presence of prophecy can only rest upon a person. Lo Mitoch Atzvut, if you're depressed, it can't. Lo mitoch atzut, and if you're lazy, you can't. Elo mitoch simcha, out of joy. Very interesting that the opposite of joy isn't only depression, it's also laziness. It's also fascinating. There's something, even though, what are you doing to get this prophecy? You're meditating. But there could be a meditation out of laziness, or a meditation out of depression, or a meditation out of joy. Joy seems to be the key. So what do you do if you're not joyous? So he says, therefore, the prophets used to have music. And when they wanted to prophesy, they would have music played. And then they would have prophecy. Now, it's interesting. Music in Judaism, after the structure of the temple, is even a sense in halakha that you're never supposed to listen to music. But I don't think we hold that way. We hold that way, Rav Moshe says, only perhaps during the 3 weeks, only during the 9 days. But the rest of the year, our custom is to listen to music. And in fact, I think we see here that it perhaps is one way to cultivate joy when we need to, and that cultivating joy isn't just a good thing to be in the world, it's a good thing for serving God. Joy, in fact, is a necessary precondition for for prophecy or for being in touch with the divine presence. We'll do a few Gemaras. Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says, and this perhaps is where the Rambam gets some of this from, how do we know that whenever you bring a sacrifice, you have to sing with it, right? The Levites would sing with every sacrifice. How do we know that's true? There's a pasuk in Devarim that says, "V'sharet b'shem Hashem Elokav," serve in the name of God. Ezeu shira shebeshem aviomer ze shira. So, what is sherut shebeshem? What is the Gemara says? What does it mean to serve in the name of God? This is song. Matya Amar Mehacha. Matya says we learned it from here. In Dvarim, it says the pasuk that we quoted before, you served God, but you didn't serve God with joy and the goodness of heart. What does it mean? Eza avoda sheba simcha. What does it mean to serve God with joy and goodness of heart? Now, it seemed obvious to us, right? Joy and goodness of heart means joy. So the Gemara says, no, it means that you have to serve God with song. So the Gemara says, oh, maybe it means Torah. Maybe Torah. Then we know that Torah brings us joy. You're not allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av. So as it says, B'kudi Hashem Yisar, Misam Chelev, the testimony of God or the Torah of God makes us joyous. So Le Vikri Tov Lo Vikri. So it's true, it brings joy to the heart, but Tov, Torah is not called Tov. Song is called joy and good. So Torah apparently is only called good, only called joy, not good. So song is both. So it's interesting, right? The Gemara doesn't take it for granted that you could just do a mitzvah with joy. You can't just force yourself to be joyous. And again, we're not talking about a joy that's frivolity. We're not talking about a joy that's a party. We're just talking about a joy that means you're not depressed. A general way of being in the world of equanimity, of being happy, satisfied. How do you get that? You don't just get that miraculously. The Gemara says you need tools to do that. And one of the tools to do a mitzvah with joy is song. Ve'ema bikurim. So the Gemara says, maybe we learn it from bringing the first fruits. As it says, v'samachta b'chala tov. Here the Gemara is asking whether the word tov, maybe the joyful service of God is when you bring the first fruits. So Gemara has a reason. Gemara says it's called tov, but it's not called the goodness of hearts. And then the Gemara says that bikurim, the first fruits, also requires song. Then the Gemara says, Shmuel bar Nachmani said in the name of Yonatan, Minayin she'en omrim shir al yayin. How do we know you only sing songs over wine? Right? When we have a mitzvah, like getting married, a bris milah, benching, these things are all over wine. As it says, in Shoftim, v'tom lehem ha-gefen, ha-chadalti ha-tiroshi ha-mesmech l'kim ba-anashim. The vine says, I give my wine, which brings joy to God and to people. So the Gemara says, I understand how wine brings joy to people, but how does wine bring joy to God? God doesn't drink wine. So Gemara says, it must be that when you make a bracha, you make it over wine. And therefore, the wine brings the human being joy, and the bracha, as it were, brings God joy. So that's right, right? I think what the Gemara is saying is, here's another method. One method is song. Another method is wine. Now, obviously, there's a danger in that, right? We know that there's a Nazir, the Nazirite, who swears off of wine because he got too crazy from it. Obviously, everything, you know, is a double-edged sword. But the Gemara seems to be saying that, you know, there are times when wine is a good way to get yourself out of the doldrums. Not too much wine, but maybe a little bit of wine. Okay, that's one Gemara. So again, the Gemara is not just, you know, one thing. It's not just black and white. The Gemara is suggesting things. The Gemara has ideas. The Gemara is trying to communicate certain things. So I think what we derive from that Gemara is, number one, that joy is very central, but some suggestions, song, wine, another Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, ein omdim lispalim b'toch atzvut. A person's not allowed, should not daven out of depression or sadness. Lo mitoch atzvut, not out of laziness. Lo mitoch tzchok, and not out of frivolity, not out of, you know, too much joy. V'lomitoch sicha, and not out of idle chatter. V'lomitoch kalad rosh. What difference between schok and kalad rosh is interesting. Kalad rosh means like lightheadedness. Schok means like laughter or joking. V'lomitoch dvarim b'telem, and not out of idle things. Ela mitoch simcha shel mitzvah, the joy of the mitzvah. So joy of the mitzvah sounds different, perhaps, than just general joy. There's some kind of joy inherent in doing a mitzvah. What is that joy? What do we mean by that? Right? What is simcha shel mitzvah? And how's that different than regular joy? I think that would be an important question. Let me open that up. Any sense of what we use this term a lot, simcha shel mitzvah, the joy of a mitzvah. Is that different than regular joy? What are your thoughts? There are no wrong answers. To pick on my cousin Charna.
I was just going to volunteer myself, actually.
Excellent.
So I would suggest that maybe the joy of a mitzvah is different than regular joy, in that, almost in the wording itself, that the joy of a mitzvah is always connected to a specific mitzvah, whereas other joy could also include joy with regarding secular topics or events or.
Okay. And is the quality of that joy different? I mean, the joy of a party and the joy of a mitzvah, is it different?
I think the joy of a mitzvah has, like you mentioned before, the potential to elevate ourselves and perhaps the action that's associated with that joy, to elevate the, I guess, the holiness within ourselves. Whereas okay. When we're involved in an activity or something that's not necessarily connected with a mitzvah, sometimes in those circumstances, it wouldn't affect a raising of our spiritual or the holiness of ourselves.
Okay. So is it a different kind of joy? Is there more than one kind of joy?
I guess I was talking more about the results that it brings.
And you're, okay.
It's more about the joy itself.
And as when you associate it, as joy might be joy, but when you associate it with a mitzvah, it has a different impact.
I was thinking also that like the joy of a mitzvah has to do with kind of imbuing meaning, right, in your life. And I think sometimes people who are depressed kind of feel like everything is meaningless. But if you're like rooted in something that is tied to values and meaning, then it can kind of root you to joy.
Yes, very good. In other words, that would seem to fit a little bit with the Rambam's notion of joy, right? In other words, this joy is not a joy of I'm going to a party. This joy is somehow a general state of being, right? It seems like from the Rambam, I should always be in that state of joy. So what is that, right? So that maybe that has something to do, and if it starts with mitzvah, maybe it has something to do with meaning, right? By the way, that's an interesting question. Does meaning give us joy? Certainly this kind of joy that the Rambam's talking about, I think meaning does give us joy. I think when we live a life that is a life of meaning, a life of purpose. I mean, you know, it's. I mean, I think depression can be clinical, and I don't want to downplay that. But I think for I think many times, I think it's true in my own life that you can feel depressed when you feel like there's no purpose, you know, or you feel like there's very little purpose when you're depressed. But a sense of, you know, people who lead, you know, often when there's a purposeful life, a sense of mission, a sense that, you know, I got something really important to do. And this is incredibly, you know, I'm standing at the center of the universe in that sense. So that's, you know, those folks are, so maybe this sheds a little bit of light onto why mitzvah and joy are so interconnected. You can't have mitzvah without joy, and you can't have joy without a mitzvah. Now, the real joy is the joy of the mitzvah, because the joy of a party, right, the joy of, you know, alcohol, or the joy of, you know, of a party, or the joy of, you know, sexual adventure, whatever it is, those joys, I think even in the midst of them, you have a sense that this is really temporary. You know, it like, you know, this is really, that kind of joy sort of pales, I think, in comparison to a deeper joy, which is a joy of like, wow, I'm leading a really meaningful life. You know, I'm doing things that are, you know, important. Not just important in, you know, in my own mind or in the mind of others, but things that are meaningful. You know, you often, one of the things that a person, you know, at the moments when we feel down, if you go and you visit the sick, or you work at a food pantry, all of a sudden it changes your, you know, you feel a little bit different. Because real joy that's or permanent, right, is often tied into something else. It's not really tied into fun, right? It always, my wife's from a family would like to use the word fun. You know, that when somebody comes back and somebody's like, did you have fun? And it has for, I've been married for 25 years. And my wife's wonderful. And my wife's family's wonderful. And they're some of the most, you know, terrific and ethical and insane people in the world. But the word fun always grates on me, because in my family, we never said that. Nobody came back from anything. Sure, maybe you can test this, Sharna. My mother, father never said, did you have fun? Maybe my mother said that. My father said, did you learn anything? Is that good for the Jews? Is that, you know, what you want to know? What's the purpose? You know, it's, you know, fun was seen as an incredibly superficial and thin thing, you know? So the word fun grates on me. You know, I don't mind fun as long as we see what it is, see it for what it is, that it's, you know, it's temporary. You want to lose yourself in it. Okay. You know, but that kind of joy, if we mix up that kind of joy with Simcha Shel Mitzvah, you know, we're comparing apples and oranges, really. Okay, I think that helps. So another Gemara. Gemara says, now it's interesting because some of this joy that the Gemara talks about is very physical. It's not like it's only spiritual, right? I mean, so far we've talked about song, we've talked about wine, we've talked about, you know, and yet we're talking about Simcha Shel Mitzvah. Tan Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Smed, at the time when the temple stood, in Simcha Ela B'Basar, there was no joy except through meat. So what does that mean? It meant the meat of the sacrifices. As it says, v'zavachta shlamim, you shall bring a shlamim offering. Shlamim is a peace offering. V'chalta sham, and you shall eat there in the temple. V'samachu lifnei sham lekecha. And you should be joyous before the Lord your God. You have to eat a meal of joy before God, right? This is not just eating a meal of joy, you know, in Arad. This is eating a meal of joy in the temple, right? That's a very holy undertaking. I mean, it's a funny thing. Only in Judaism, you know, is the physical and spiritual so intertwined. And now that the temple doesn't stand anymore, so what are we going to do? We don't have this holy eating of meat anymore. So the Gemara says, "Ein simcha el b'yayin." Today, the only wine, as it says, "V'yayin yisam el chava menosh." Wine brings joy to the human heart, right? But we're talking about, we're not just talking about drinking wine. Right? We're talking about drinking wine before God. We're talking about Kiddush. We're talking about Shabbos. We're talking about mitzvah. In other words, you can take, and when you take the wine and you use it, you know, at a party, so it's very short-lived. But you take the wine and you use it before God. So now you've done this miraculous Jewish thing where you take the very physical and you combine it with the spiritual, and you can have a joy that is actually, you know, kind of transcendent, eternal. It has a sense not only of being happy, but purposeful. I mean, that's very interesting. It's very hard to have secular joy that's purposeful. If it's a party. But once you imbue the party with spirituality, now it becomes really important. You know, the Purim Suda is, it's a mitzvah to get drunk, but it's one of the holiest things there is, if it's done right, and if it's done in the right context. We feel this on Shabbos, right? The Kesher Israel, there's a lot of drinking on Shabbos. Not these days during Corona, but the old days. So, if you just drink at something else, you may have the immediate joy, but you don't have that sense of that this is purposeful. Whereas in Judaism, because the physical and spiritual are so intertwined, there's a sense of purpose that really emerges. And that, I think, not only reinforces the simcha, it makes the simcha real joy. Okay. Another Gemara. I praised joy. Simcha shel mitzvah. What joy is that? Right. This is a quote from, I think, Kohelet, from Ecclesiastes. Simcha shel mitzvah. It refers to the simcha, joy of mitzvah. Well, the simcha mazeh oseh. On the other hand, in Ecclesiastes, it says, what good is joy? The answer is that's joy that's not of a mitzvah. There's different kinds of joy. Joy can be eternal, it can be transcendent, or joy can be, you know, very short-lived. And here's where the Rambam gets that notion of the prophets listening to music. The Shekhinah, divine presence, can't dwell in a person through depression and not through frivolity, but simcha shel mitzvah. In other words, when it's simcha joined with the eternity of the mitzvah, that's how we tune into God. A little piece of psychology that I think really reinforces this notion of the sense of joy that's so intertwined with meaning. And this is from a book called Existential Therapies by Mick Cooper. It goes through all different kinds of, there's a whole branch of psychotherapy called existential therapy. There's probably 10 different forms of existential therapy. A very famous one was Viktor Frankl, developed one called logotherapy. He was as we know, he was a Jewish psychoanalyst, and he survived the camps, and he wrote about that in psychological terms. He says that human beings' most basic motivation is to find meaning in her life, a cause, a reason, a certain why an aim, an ideal, or a purpose in the sense of an orientation toward a goal to which one devotes one's energy and time. Other motivations for Frankl are subsidiary to this one. Hence, for instance, an individual may strive to be happy. This is because she has set happiness as her life's goal, if that's your goal. Alongside this, Frankl argues that a lack of such direction can lead to a deep sense of frustration, emptiness, and depression, as well as neurosis, hypothesis that receives support. Okay. Frankl goes on to suggest that many people today show a more or less marked degree of existential vacuum. Right? We often live in a world in which there isn't such a given sense of purpose. This sense of meaninglessness may be particularly prevalent in certain periods in a person's life, adolescence, following retirement, crisis of some sort. Here, everyday existential frustration and questioning can develop into more serious existential and energetic neurosis, whereby the individual turns consciously or unconsciously to self-destructive behaviors, right? Essentially, addictions, compulsions, right? It's an attempt to fill the existential void. I had a friend who was a rabbi in St. Louis, and he also ran a 12-step program. And he would sometimes say to people, you have a God-sized hole in you, and what that you sometimes fill with drugs or whatever else you're filling it with, right? So it's, on some level, what we're really searching for is meaning. I'm not talking about certain clinical depressions that should not be thought light of and require a lot, require medication. But there's more than that going on, I think, in our world today. Logotherapy then aims to help individuals suffering from these kinds of neuroses to rediscover a sense of meaning, purpose, hope in their lives. It doesn't have to be just religious. Indeed, even for individuals who are not suffering from existential neurosis, Frankl argues finding meaning in life can help people overcome the most appalling physical and psychological treatment. And actually, he said that in the camps, he saw people survived often because they had a sense of why, why they were living, what they were living. It's interesting. There's been some evidence during COVID that if people are just are in quarantine, and it's only to keep themselves healthy that they could be depressed, more than if you say to them, you need to quarantine to save other people. You're saving other people by quarantine. You're worried, not about you, it's about not infecting your neighbor. So that actually creates a sense of meaning, greater purpose around the quarantine. And people become less depressed if they see the quarantine in those terms, which of course it is. As Nietzsche stresses and Frankl frequently quotes, he who has a why to live can bear almost any how. This is Frankl's most famous line that he learned from the camps. He who has a why to live can bear almost any how. As discussed earlier, however, it's important to note that logotherapists know that. Okay, it's a little bit more about psychotherapy. In other words, an individual in a situation such as losing her job should not ask herself, what can I make of this situation? But what is the situation asking of me? That's fascinating. Right, to always ask in life, what is this? What's my? Right? It actually, this reminds me of the first words of the famous Musser book, Seel Sasharim, which is that he says, I'm not telling anybody anything they don't know in this book, but he says we have to always ask ourselves, Mach vasiba olami, what's my obligation in the world? What's my purpose here? What's my purpose in the universe? Frankl goes on to argue, however, that each individual unconsciously knows the answer to this question. Just intuitive insight is the human conscience. Clearly, such an outlook is at odds with Sartre, his notion that human beings are free to choose their own meanings and values in each situation. In other words, Frankl believed that there is a sense of value that we have that's fundamental. Some respect, okay. So that is, I think that here Frankl really is tuning into, what Judaism has known for a very, very long time, which is that simcha shel mitzvah. That joy which has purpose is a much deeper joy and a much truer joy and a much more long-lasting joy and is real than just, the joy of having fun, as it were. You cannot talk about joy and depression without talking about Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov is the expert on joy and depression. Many think that Rabbi Nachman himself suffered from depression, but he talks about this very much. There's one place where I think it's Rabbi Nachman who says, joy itself is not a mitzvah, but it causes every mitzvah. Depression is not a sin, but it causes all the sins. His mitzvah gedola, right, this is very famous, became a song even, mitzvah gedola lios b'simcha tamid. It's a tremendous mitzvah to always be joyous. U'liskabir l'harchik ha'atzvus v'amar shchar b'chol kocho. We have to work to chase away depression. He says, whether this is medically true or not, I don't know, but he says illness comes from the destruction of joy, from not having the right joy. Here it gets very mystical. He says, there are 10 kinds of song and that are connected to joy. As it says, Ali Asar Ali Nava. I quote from Tehillim to prove that. These 10 kinds of joy, they come from the 10 heartbeats. This is a very Rabbi Nachman, a little bit more mystical. Okay. I'm going to skip a little bit of this because it's very technical. About the 10 types of song and how to cure people. Asimcha hi refuah gadola. Joy is a great healing. Las is tiskadel asimcha ma'od. In the future, he says, I assume he means the Messianic era, joy will be increased. This is what the rabbis say. That it says that in the future time, the righteous will dance in a circle and God will be at the head of the circle. There's a Gemara that says that at the head of the bed of an ill person, God dwells there. And so he says the concept of the circle dancing, the concept of the person who is ill are connected because it sounds like a very similar word. Machol means a circle. Chole is somebody who is ill. And he says this is the concept that the joy, of the circle dance with the divine presence at the head of it can cure. Okay. Another piece from Rabbi Nachman. He says, "Vaklal shtarich l'skabram od b'chol kochos." He says it's not easy to be joyous. We have to work very hard to be joyous. He says our nature is to be depressed. He says because we live in the vicissitudes of time. We live in a world which, you know, in his world he had a lot less control than we do. But we live in a world in which there are sudden pains and difficulties and life is unpredictable and life is fragile. And so we tend toward depression, he says. Everybody has a lot of pain and difficulties. So we have to work very hard, he says, to be besimcha tamid, always in joy. To make themselves happy in any way you can. Even through silliness, he says. Very interesting. Rabbi Nachman sometimes would sit on the ground with kids and play. So that's interesting. Rabbi Nachman says, right, so far we have wine, we have song, combined with mitzvahs, obviously, it's not just frivolity. But here Rabbi Nachman says, listening to, comedians on YouTube, it's not such a bad thing. You know, that's, if you haven't listened to Jim Gaffigan, I recommend Jim Gaffigan. He makes me laugh so hard. Here I don't drive, but St. Louis, I used to drive, and I sometimes couldn't even drive. I was laughing so hard. And I listened to him. He's a very, very funny guy. Happens to be very clean. But right there, that's not a bad thing. Avshagam lev nishbar hu tov ma'od. He says, even though it's true that a broken heart is a good thing in Judaism, im kol zehu rak be'ez hashah, he says, but that has to be very specific. It has to be bounded. This is great. He says, your general state should be joy. Right? First, he says, our general tendency is toward depression. We have to work on ourselves that our general state is joy. But we want to leave a little time each day to have a broken heart. Because that's so important in the service of God. Right? Lev nishbar ruach. It says that a broken heart, right, is what God hears. Because how are you going to pray if you don't have a broken heart? Right? It's interesting. The Ramban says that prayer, the obligation of prayer, actually devolves upon us in times of pain. But the Rambam says you're always obligated to daven. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said we daven every day because the human being is always in a state of pain about their life. As long as you realize, once you realize that you have very little control over your life and that your life is frail. So you're always in a state of pain, of existential pain. And so there's always room for prayer. There's always an obligation to pray. So he says, you do need that. Like, if you're only happy, you know, so how are you going to pray, really? So you need a little bit of, but he says you need to have that be very bounded. You know, you have one specific time a day, I guess, time of prayer, when you could have a broken heart. Move at Slenu, Avokal Hayom, Kula Tzarchibzim. It says, generally, you need to be in a state of joy. Kimilev Nishbar, Bakal Yechol, Novel Marshal. He says, because the truth is that a broken heart is very dangerous, it can lead you to depression. It's not the same as depression, or else he wouldn't allow it. We could lead you there. He says it's you're more tending toward depression from a broken heart than from joy, God forbid. The bole is a holy list. Interesting. And he says, he says, okay, maybe there's a danger that joy will lead you to frivolity. But there's also a danger that a broken heart, being too serious, is going to lead you to depression. He says, so which one is more dangerous? Depression. He says, err on the side of joy. Therefore, a person should always be in a state of joy. He says, but set aside a little specific time just to have a broken heart. If only we all had, you know, control over our emotions like this. I don't think we do. But you know, obviously a person has to find whatever help they need, whether it's, you know, for us often medication or therapy but you know, other things also, like, you know, sometimes we might think, okay, you know, I'm not so happy right now, so what, doesn't matter. But maybe it does matter. Maybe we need to do something. Maybe we need to sing. There are other places where Rabbi Nachman says, sing a niggun to yourself and it will change your mood. And it does sometimes, you know, smiling changes your mood. Does taking a walk change your mood? Does calling somebody change your mood? Does listening to music change your mood? Those are very important things. You know, it's not just nothing to, you know, we shouldn't just go on with our life and say, okay, I'm not in the best mood. Maybe you have an obligation to give some attention to your mood. I'll just finish with this piece from Rabbi Nachman. It is Mashalim Rechokim Hashem Yisbach. He says, today people are far from God. He lived in the early 1800s. They don't come close to God. So why is that? He says, because they don't have Yishuv Hadas. They don't have, hard to know what Yishuv Hadas means. Literally, it means a sort of settled mind. Achdai says, but no, Sha'ideh Mar Shchora, through depression, you don't have control of your own mind in depression. So it's hard to have a sense of settledness. When you have joy, you have much more control, he says, over your own thoughts, over your own emotions, over your own brain. And then you can have yishuvadas, you can have calmness. He says, through joy comes a world of freedom. And it says, mitzvah gedolis b'simcha tamid. He says, it's a mitzvah to be in joy always. So we have to err on the side of joy. Obviously, these are difficult times, times when sometimes it's hard to find joy. You know, on the other hand, you know, we know that sometimes there are certain silver linings. Sometimes there are moments of, I think also being sometimes thankful for certain things can be helpful. Anybody else, any thoughts generally about this or specific thoughts about how to cultivate joy, how to deal with depression or how to cultivate simcha shel mitzvah? Any things that you find helpful? Lily, if you're talking, you're on mute.
Oh, I thought it was really interesting, the idea that should be generally, you know, full of joy, but leave a little time for heartbreak, because I also think that makes, like, allows a space for heartbreak to be a little bit redemptive and meaningful as well, right? Because I think there could be, I mean, obviously not right now, but in general, you know, say if you look on Facebook and it's kind of an unrelenting positivity, and you could get the idea that, like, some people's lives are, you know, very happy and very perfect, and you know that yours is not perfect. And so this allows you to kind of not to try to erase that, but to, like, live with that and redeem it kind of through connection with God, through prayer, and see it as part of, like, a healthy whole.
Yeah, we should have a day on Facebook. Everybody posts their depression, their difficulties, what they're most disappointed about in their children.
It'll catch on. Let's start it.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's obviously it's a trope already, but that's one of the dangers of social media, of course, is that you know, people only often post the times of joy. Any other thoughts? You found that there are certain things during COVID that make you happy that you did not find before?
Oh, I have one. Since I was unable to visit people, obviously, I started doing handwritten letters. Some of my friends who I can't see, some of them are in quarantine, and that's been really fulfilling. And also doing letters to some people in prison. It's
wow.
It's only one person, I guess it's hard sometimes you just forget and to write back or things like that, but I try to be consistent, I guess, and I think finding different modes of communication is really meaningful, because I think just texting someone, usually it's just like scheduling or can you come to my house at this time, and now you can't come to their house.
That's interesting. No, I think that's very insightful. It's true often. I mean, if you think about, who in the community have you not talked to in a long time because of COVID, and you send them an email or give them a call, you'll find not only does it make their day, but it also makes you happier. That's something I think.
Yeah, I think it's the fulfillment that you get from doing such a mitzvah. As a matter of fact, that's it feeds into what I was going to share, which is, since COVID got serious, I never used to speak to my mother daily. I mean, in my adult life, since I've been living out of the house, never. And since COVID got serious, basically, I do speak to her daily now.
Wow. Yeah.
And like the woman before me who was just sharing, I think it's, I lost my train of thought. Sorry, my middle age.
Calling your mother.
Yeah, I want to.
Okay, that's good.
Something related to what the other woman just said. Mm-hmm. When I remember it, I'll share.
Yeah, yeah. I find sometimes seeing people. I'm an introvert by nature, so I get very tired after I see a lot of people. Sometimes, these days you don't see people so much, so seeing people can. I remember when we started doing things in the park, programming the park, just having 10 people together in the park was like, wow, it's like a party. It's we used to have 200 in a room for Kiddush, but now, just seeing people and just see people interact with each other gives you a sense. So.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm not surprised that the Gemara doesn't mention movement, because I feel like there was just so much more movement in the ancient world because they didn't have cars.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the movement is a big part of the equation, too, right? There's a lot of science behind that, how exercise fights off depression. And I think it's the aggravated people kind of being stuck inside a bit, but also it's folks have been, and I've been more in touch with how much exercise can be, an endorphin booster almost immediately. Yeah.
No, that's true. Yeah. I was just talking to a congregant today about, I said, he's still running, and we're comparing how much we run. So I try to run 2-3 times a week, about, a mile or two. And he said, do you like doing it? I said, no, I hate doing it, but I like how I feel afterwards. which is true. But it feels good afterwards.
Yeah. I ran competitively in high school, and sometimes I'd watch TV when I ran, and on the treadmill. And when there was a scary part on the TV, because I watched really dramatic things, I would run faster on the treadmill.
You're running away from something.
I was running away from something, but it's a treadmill, so you're not really running away. But
there's actually an app called Run Zombie Run, which would basically make you part of a zombie thriller, and you are literally, you're exercising, but you're running from zombies.
Oh my gosh.
That's funny. An app for everything. Very good. Well, thank you for sharing. And I wish everybody a good Thanksgiving. And it's nice that there's on the one hand, every day in Judaism is Thanksgiving. But on the other hand, it's a good thing that we call attention to giving thanks. And shall have bracha.
Thank you, you too.
Thank you.
What was the comedian's name again, Rabbi?
Jim Gaffigan. Thank you. If you look on either YouTube or Spotify or Google him, he's just so funny. Jim Gaffigan. It's an obligation. You have to listen to Jim Gaffigan. He's actually a very religious Catholic.
I think I've heard him before. Yeah.
Got five excited. Children.
Yeah, he's very, he makes fun of that too. It's very funny.
That's cool.
Apparently he has something new out. I can't remember what it was. Yona was telling me that. Okay. Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you.
And for the class.